Guillermo Fesser is a Spanish television and radio journalist known in his country for his humorous but compassionate news reporting, and especially for an innovative Madrid-based national morning radio talk show that ran for 25 years and had over a million listeners. He now lives with his family in Rhinebeck, New York, where he broadcasts weekly stories on life in small-town America to radio in Spain. He's written a book as well, 100 Miles from Manhattan, which is an affectionate portrait of life in small-town America and beyond. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Guillermo Fesser to our program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight.
Hola, Joe, and thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure to be in the radio, and it's a lot of responsibility always. You know, I mean, so many people would like to be here and have a minute. And, you know, I hope I do a good job.
Well, thank you very, very much. I know you will. I mean, it's nice to be on the air with a broadcaster. That's fun.
I feel home. There's something magic about this thing. I don't know what it is.
Don't you think it takes a special personality or a damaged personality to want to be in a room slightly dark by yourself talking to people, like, as you know, you have a million people listening to you when you're talking on the microphone?
I think because the radio, even though we're talking a lot, is more about listening to somebody. And when you do television and you are on a stage, it's more like showing, like doing, like telling.
Yeah.
But a radio is something more intimate. It's like, even though we're talking, we ask questions, we want to listen. And I think the intimate atmosphere is not for us, it's for the person who comes here for a visit. And that's the cool thing. You get to know people, a lot of people doing that, that in other media probably not, because it's faster and it's a little more shallow.
I was listening to some tapes of your broadcast, and you have a very unique style, and it is because there is a warmth and an affection there for that audience, I think.
Doing radio, you don't have a following, you know, you don't have an audience, you're nobody, so you.
Right.
It's not because of your ego, but it's because you want to tell some stories that you want people to, welcome and receive. So an audience is important. So you have to take care of that. But I think the important thing is, like, when you talk to somebody on the radio, I think it's good to be the same person that you are when you talk to somebody on the street. And I think people appreciate that. I think people really appreciate when somebody's natural. Then you like it more, you like it less. The comment could be wrong, the comment could be right. But it's a real person. And I think we're in a time that technology is overwhelming us, and we appreciate real people.
Because so much of what we hear on radio in this country is yelling. Especially in talk radio, it's yelling. People yelling about their opinion on this, their opinion on that. So when you hear someone who's just talking, having a conversation, as you do, it seems very, very nice and refreshing.
Well, I think it's like the same thing for teachers. Hopefully, it's like people who decide to go to university, decide to go to high school. Normally, they go there because they want to learn something from the students, not because they want to say something that they already say. It's so boring to repeat yourself and tell what you know because you already know. You say that hopefully because, like in a tennis game, somebody will bounce the ball back with some new ideas and you'll feel refreshed after that.
So how does a guy from Madrid with a successful radio show end up in Rhinebeck, New York?
Well, I...
And how many times have you asked yourself that question?
Every day. 2 days ago when Real Madrid was playing, you know, against the Bayern. Every day that I feel like having a little bit of tapa, ham, with my beer in a bar. I can get the ham here. I can get the beer here. But it's the whole thing of going to a place where it's not a bar for people having hard alcohol, but families and friends. It's a meeting point. It's a culture of the street that I miss. But, I fell in love many years ago with Sarah Hill from Rhinebeck, New York, and I'm still in love with her. And I guess when you marry somebody from Rhinebeck, New York, you end up in Rhinebeck, New York. So if she would have been from Philippines, I'll be on the air right now from Philippines.
It'd be a different show.
Yeah.
It is, so the book is beautiful, and it's these dispatches from Rhinebeck and from the Hudson Valley, and many you have told stories. You still keep in touch with the Spanish audience. audience, you regularly share your experiences in this country with that audience?
Well, you know what? The United States is at this moment the empire. So in Europe, and I will talk about Spain because, you know, I mean, Europe is in general is the same thing. But I mean, I'm not the European guy to tell you the whole story about the continent here. But in Spain, everybody assumed that we know everything about the United States because we have the American music, we have the American movies, we have the American news, so on. But the reality is that we only have the headlines of the stories and pretty much is the top level. Like, Tom Hanks is a great actor and he got an Oscar. The bottom level where, you know, this every single children here is obese and they if they have a chance, they will get a machine gun and go to school and, you know, and shoot the teacher. But the daily life in between, we don't get it. And we don't get it and we don't get the reasons why those things happen. The same thing is like we love the States for many reasons and we export the results of the States like the Starbucks. Okay, Spain have the most beautiful cafes. The cafes are disappearing in Spain. Starbucks are flourishing because instead of exporting why America is America, the idea of America, the idea of networking, the idea of helping each other, the idea of fighting for a project, the idea of marketing your ideas, and then apply that to our cafes and do our own cafes, we just get the results of America and put it there. And then they're misplaced. So the idea of the United States in Spain and the idea of the United States that I found here when I came to Rhinebeck 10 years ago for sabbatical, trying to write a movie, didn't square. And I thought, why? So in that reflection, I started asking a lot of questions to a lot of people. And I found that ordinary people from a little small town in America were actually extraordinary people. And everybody has a beautiful biography if somebody put the passion in telling that story.
How important was it to you to be, I mean, ultimately it wasn't your choice because she was from Rhinebeck. So,
she could have been from Tivoli.
Right, could have been from Tivoli. But 100 miles from Manhattan. And there is that connection to New York. And yet, so you have really both sides of the spectrum. You have the large city not too far away. And yet you have this very small town of which you talk about. And it seems in the writing it's a bit of a mix of America overall and yet also interjecting sort of the country mouse, city mouse analogy in trying to give people an idea of the American perspective.
Well, that's very unique of the States. One of the things that shocked me the first time I was here is how rural this country is, how based the whole culture of this country is in farming and in the rural America still. In one thing that is so important is how Americans are so mingled with nature. Nature is so important in this country, and every single day life, everybody has to cope with nature. I mean, the seasons are there, the weather is there and means something for you every day. There's animals. I mean, in Europe, we still have animals and have forests, but I mean, 2,000 years ago, the Romans were there. They chopped every single tree. Some grew up back. But you have to make an effort to go to Spain and see birds. You have to make an effort to go to a park or to go to a forest. We have beautiful marsh and lands, but as I said, they don't interfere with the daily life. And here in the daily life, Americans have to cope with nature. And I think that's the reason why America, the whole continent, has a better or a more happier beat that Europeans. They said Europe is like an old grumpy lady and America is like the young boy or girl who are excited and they still can do stuff. And I think I think a lot of that is related to nature. Americans, I mean, when you feel like you're part of something, you're part of the whole game, you're part of nature, you feel more spirited and more happy and more ready to go for things. And I think in Europe, we've been removed from nature. You have to look for that, and it's a big difference. So nature is important in a book, but in the other way, as you said, New York is so close. And we have in Rhinebeck a merging culture of people who grew up there forever and people who came with new ideas. And I think it's beautiful what's happening there, I mean, working together.
How often do you go to the city?
Not really often. You know, I mean, when you have a family, you have kids, that's another thing about Americans. Everybody's crazy here.
Everyone is crazy. I agree with that.
About sports, everybody's crazy. Yeah. I mean, my father never went to see me. I used to play rugby. My father didn't know if I was playing rugby or tennis or I wasn't playing anything. Here, if you miss one game of your kid, all the parents look at you like, well, where were you? And where did you come?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a little crazy. So if you have kids here in the school, you have to drive them to soccer, to tennis, to to crew to name it, whatever. So no time to go to the city.
Yeah, it's like these little settlements, little camps that develop at a lacrosse game or a field hockey game or a soccer game, where they all of a sudden they just the tents go up, all the parents come, they meet. And they strike the set, and they move off to the next town.
Yeah, but I have to tell you, on the other hand, that helped me a lot to write this book. While I was coming here, I felt myself, stuck with all those parents watching a game that probably for me wasn't very interesting. So I started asking questions. So yeah. And that's one thing when you interview somebody, you have a Mick Jagger here, and you tend to ask him questions about Rolling Stones, about music, about the tour, about his relationship with Keith Richards. But Mick Jagger is a father too, and maybe his feet hurt, and he likes Chinese food, and whatever. So there's more thing about that. So I tend to start asking questions to those parents where we're watching games about something different, what you do, what you hear, who you marry, whatever. And that's why I came with the stories that I would have never imagined.
The stories that are in the book are presented in a chronological way, a month, a chapter. And so you wanted to kind of bring us through your time here.
Yeah, I wanna get the feeling that I was here hoping to write a script that I finally did, but it took me another extra year, and how I was bumping into different people, and chronologically, because as I said, nature is so important that I wanted to get the feeling, at least in Spain, that how different it is to meet somebody in the street when it's snowing, that when it's sunny, when it's something else happened. And the difference between the way we interact. Like in Spain, you meet somebody on the street, you say goodbye, so you don't want him to stop. You don't say hello. In the States, you say hello and ask, how are you doing? And they answer you. So you have to actually stop there and listen to the answer. So the different cultural things but it's not a book about me or about my family. It's a book about the people I encounter, how fascinated I got about the stuff they did, and how I follow their lives. To tell people stories about the United States that I'm sure a lot of people don't know. And it's not because I'm more savvy or anything. It's because I have a sabbatical, I have free time. I was asking questions that normally people don't ask, because you're in New York City. You see all that steam coming out, and you don't even wonder where the steam comes from. You don't have time to do that. You have to go feed your kids. You have to go work. You have to go to the movies. But here is, a journalist from Spain just wandering and asking questions till he finds the right person.
I'm fascinated about the whole thing that, because it would be great in our culture if we could integrate that idea of just when we see somebody, just say goodbye.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Sometimes,
that'd be lovely.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Good for you. As far as the what comes next? Are you're here for the long haul, right?
I'm here for a while. Yeah, I won't move my. I've been moving my kids back and forth several times. I have a daughter now in high school, 3 more years, and I want her to finish there, and then we'll see. But I'm working while I'm promoting this book in Spain, in the States. I'm working in a series of children's book in Spain. The main character is a girl, 11 year old, in a wheelchair. And it's caught a lot of attention on the world of what we call disabled, or I don't know how to call it. They change so many times. I call it functional diversity, but anyways, whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm trying
disability,
to do.
Handicapped.
Yeah. So I'm trying to work on a musical right now, because the book comes with a lot of apps. If you give a book to a 7-8-year-old kid right now, he said, like, why are you punishing me? Why I have to read this? But you give a book that you put the cell phone on top of the illustration and comes a video or a song, and he likes it, hopefully he'll enjoy the characters and end up reading the book. That's what we want. So that's what happened in Spain. The schools are using that. And we're going to use the whole material to create a musical without telling anybody, to do an instruction manual of how to cope with people with disabilities. Telling kids that you're not supposed to cross or help to cross the street to a blind person. You're supposed to help to cross the street to a blind person if the blind person wants to cross the street, because otherwise you put it in a place that he didn't want to be. Or if you're supposed or not supposed to shake the hand to a guy who comes, tetraplegic in a wheelchair. People are like confused, what I'm doing, shaking his hand, no, maybe I'm going to remind him that he can move his hand, whatever. No, you do it. I mean, he can do it, but he expects you to be polite and do it. So stuff like that. And I think when you can mix having fun with learning something, is bingo. So, yeah. But you don't have to tell anybody that you're trying to teach anything. You have to tell everybody, hello, come and have fun with me. And then
tell a story.
Exactly. Then he learns, is their thing.
What it follow. The book is marvelous. It is called 100 Miles from Manhattan. It is published by Little Bridge, and it's just beautiful. A lot of wonderful stories. Guillermo Fesser, I thank you so much for being with us. It's a delight to meet you, and I thank you so much for spending time with us this morning.
Well, I'm very excited to be with you. It's a pleasure, and it's an honor. And actually, we're going to take a picture so I can put it in my Facebook. I started Facebook. I didn't even know what the hell is this, but I'm starting, and I'm going to put your picture there.
All right,
just
excellent.
Just in case it works.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.